change for once in my life.
Welcome to Make the Change, your weekly dose of inspiration for creating positive change in your life. Learn how changing your thoughts, feelings, words, and actions can lead to the life you desire and deserve. No need to go it alone. Let us become part of your journey to get from where you are to where you want to be. Every Saturday at noon, the show's host, Patricia Terrell, and her fabulous guests will lead you with a weekly prescription to invigorate your mind, body, and soul. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with Make the Change.
Hello, and welcome to another live broadcast of Make the Change radio show. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. And as always, the call-in number for the show is 1-800-450-7876. I am so excited about today's show. And before I begin our discussion, I want to share some incredible news. The Health Policy Consortium, also known as HPRC, chose to partner with Make the Change Radio Show for the remainder of the year to inform our listeners about public policy, how public policy can improve our health, and what each of us can do to drive public policy decisions in our communities. So thank you, Crystal Reed, Alisa Mosley, Byron Soji Thomas, and the entire HPRC and CTIS team for believing in Make the Change Radio Show. Without your commitment, our goal to continue to help our listeners make positive changes in their lives would be significantly challenged. Now, today is HPRC's inaugural show, and they will be joining us once a month to talk about some of their upcoming events, policy issues, and important research findings that will help improve our health and our communities. We're going to learn why some communities are healthier than others and what we can do to help make our communities amongst the healthiest. And joining me in the studio today for HPRC's inaugural show is Byron Soji Thomas. Byron is HPRC's Deputy Director for Health Policy Research and Analysis. Byron, welcome to the show. Well, listen, let's talk about HPRC. And, you know, I just barely touched the surface of what the Health Policy Research Consortium does. So tell us more about HPRC, your mission, and how what you do can help us live healthier lives.
Well, the Health Policy Research Consortium is a policy research organization, and our work tries to find connections between policy and health outcomes, especially in vulnerable populations. Our focus is here in the Mid-Atlantic area, so Maryland, the District, Virginia, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Delaware. And we are interested in helping audiences understand what is it that public policy does that impacts health, or how is it that public policy can help to fix health problems and inequity in health and health disparities.
And so how long have you been around?
We've been around a couple years, and we're trying to stay around for a couple more.
I'm hoping for that, too. So tell me, how are you funded?
We are funded by the National Institute for Minority Health and Health Disparities, which is one of the institutes of the NIH.
And so who is your target audience? Who do you want to reach, and why?
Well, ideally, we want to reach everybody, because at some point, everybody touches the health system, whether at the beginning of life or at the end of life or somewhere in between. But our specific audience, as I just mentioned, is regional in the Mid-Atlantic area. And our work began here in Maryland. We are headquartered in Prince George's County, so within the general radius of WOL. And we are specifically wanting to help populations that are more vulnerable, populations that have less access to health care than the general population, populations that are impacted by racial and ethnic disparities in health. That is, there are differences in their access and differences in what happens to their health that make them sometimes sicker than others. So we are interested in making sure that these are understood better than they are already, and helping to close some of these gaps where they exist.
Okay, so let's break it down. Now, you write a lot of policy papers based on your research, and then you provide this information to people in the community. So let's break down this, these two big words, you know, public policy. What is public policy? Can you give it, give us a nice definition in layman's terms?
Layman's terms, yes, always useful. Well, public policy is really a shorthand for laws, for regulations, for guidance, for policies, for advisories, for oversight, for accountability, for enforcement. All the rules of the road that we put in place to make society a better place, to make society to so that we all enjoy the benefits of living as one community. And these are created at different levels. So some policy would be federal, and those would be driven by the U.S. Congress and the executive branch of the U.S. government. Some policies are regional, such as the region we're trying to serve here in the Mid-Atlantic region. Some policies would be state, some will be county or local. And it all depends on the problem you're trying to solve for which population.
Okay, so let's say, let's break it down a little farther. And so say, for instance, explain to us how the public policies get into place. Do they happen by someone in the community identifying a problem and then going to the proper representative, or do they happen by other areas?
Good question. Yes. Sometimes they happen because a member of the community speaks up. Sometimes they happen because somebody like us does some research, does some study, writes a paper. Somebody with influence picks it up and says, wow, I didn't know this was a problem. Or sometimes, unfortunately, something keeps showing up in the news. You turn on the clock news and this thing keeps showing up much more than any of us are comfortable. And then sometimes you get double action from the people that can fix the problem, i.e. elected representatives or appointed representatives, pick up the ball and say, let's fix this. Or they are pushed by the folks who elect them or appoint them to solve the problem. So, unfortunately, many times it just comes out of problems arise. It becomes a matter of public interest because it's always in the news, or because somebody begins to push and complain and agitate and advocate for change.
Yeah, and I remember during one of our conversations, you gave a great example, which has to do with how we ended up getting a lot of smoke alarm detectors in our homes. Can you use that as an example to explain?
That's actually a great example. So for most of history, we've been dealing with fires. And throughout human history, we've been trying to figure out a way to mitigate fires and make sure we don't have as many of them and they're not as destructive. The idea is, as the technology has evolved, we have tried to figure out, okay, well, you know, the old people used to say, where there's smoke, there's fire. So can we catch the smoke before it becomes fire? So engineers get to it and they say, okay, can I design something that can catch smoke before it becomes fire? Once the technology was ready, people began to agitate and said, well, the engineers have found a way to do this. Well, now, can we now begin to put these things in homes and buildings so we can catch smoke before smoke becomes fire? And the more people did it, the more it became popular, the more it became accepted practice, the more it became standard practice, and then people started to write laws, don't build a house without putting a smoke detector in.
Wow, great example. So let's talk about, let us know how much power we actually have to drive public policy. Because sometimes we think these laws are permanent, but they're not.
Indeed. You know, here in the U.S., We are told in social studies class that it's a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. So without the people, there's no government. And so, as I said earlier, government comes at different levels and attacks problems at different levels based on the community or the population you're trying to serve. So to the degree that as a citizen, as a member of the community, you are engaged in trying to make sure that what affects you is known to your elected representatives, what affects you is understood by those that you hope to protect your interests, to the degree that you are involved in that, to the degree that you are aware of what these problems are, and you're aware of where to go, when you need to say something about it, that will be the degree to which you are able to address whatever it is that you're trying to solve.
And something else you said that I really like when we spoke earlier, you said it is always better when public policy is driving the bus. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you have, maybe smoking is a good example here. This is probably easier to answer this question by using smoking as an example. So we came to a place where the science was clear about half a century ago that smoking kills people and smoking causes cancer. And at that point, the Surgeon General at the time decided it's time to draw a line in the sand and say we should warn every smoker that smoking can kill them. So the Surgeon General at the time decided I'm going to write a report and we're going to put and make sure that the nation sees and hears it. And everybody in healthcare should read this report and see it. And everybody who smokes should see a warning on the smoking pack, on the pack of cigarettes, that this thing can kill you. And half a century later, we have cut the smoking rate among American adults in half. Well, actually, by more than half. And the process of reducing how many people smoke has developed over time. So from the Surgeon General's report in 1964 to states picking up the ball and deciding to write their own laws about who will smoke, where you will smoke, when you will smoke, how much you will pay for the cigarette, how much taxes you will be charged on the cigarette to make sure that it's too expensive for people like young people who don't have that much money to be buying cigarettes. And on all the way until there was a class action lawsuit by attorneys general in multiple states to get the tobacco industry to admit that their product was actually killing people contrary to what they had been saying for many decades prior, and getting a settlement out of them, which went out to the various states, and the states are using that to tell people the same story. Don't smoke. And if you smoke, I'm going to help you quit, and we're going to make sure you don't develop a smoking habit, so we're going to go to schools and tell the kids, don't smoke. And so that is a great example of how public policy can drive the bus. So we know the science. Smoking can kill you. Smoking can do this to your body. It can cause cancer, not just in your lungs, but in all major organ systems. Okay, so we know that. So what do? We tell the people, well, it's a free country. I can smoke if I want. Well, okay. Well, you need to know the consequences of smoking. And then smoking is costing the nation billions of dollars in health costs, direct costs and indirect costs. Well, we don't want to be paying that money if we don't have to, so let's show the people, let's show the government, here's what it is costing you in health costs because there's so many smokers who we have to take care of when they get sick. How about not as many people smoke? So this is a great example of policy driving the bus and explaining to folks this is what we can do to solve
it. I think that's a great example, and because it not only affects the individuals who are smoking, but it affects everyone around them as
Absolutely.
Well. And sometimes we get upset when the government intervenes and try to control our lives, but in the end, it can really work better for everyone.
Indeed, and you asked the question about the power that the individual can have in helping to do make some of these changes, and you know, there are debates and conversations about all of these things. There are varying opinions about how to do all of this. There are varying opinions about what the cause is for a particular health problem. There are varying opinions about what the solution to the problem is. There are varying opinions about whether or not the numbers and the statistics and the data we collect are actually accurate. But at the end of the day, once we can all come to a consensus that, okay, here's what the evidence tells us, what are we going to do about it? And at that point, if the individual steps up and says, okay, well, this affects me, what am I going to do to help make it better where I am for my own life and for my community, then at that point, the individual can begin to affect policy.
Well, I think that's very important what you said about how to get the community involved. We know that community involvement in creating public policy is so vital. So talk to us about how we can get involved. And I think you talked about like town hall meetings and voting. Talk about those areas.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so part of our understanding about this is that we should do our work and involve the community in it. So the big term is community-based participatory research. That is to say, the community should participate in the research, not just at the back end when we have findings to show them, but at the front end when we're trying to design what the research process looks like. So the same should hold for policy. So let's take an example. In Prince George's County, they are in the process of rewriting the zoning ordinance. The zoning ordinance is how a particular jurisdiction, a county or a state, decides how they will use land and where they will put buildings and where they will put the parks and where they will put the airport and how tall the buildings will be and how close it will be to the park and how close it will be to transportation. So that whole process is called zoning. Zoning has an impact on health. And, you know, if you've never been involved with zoning in any way and you don't, that's not part of your world, you don't know that. But we found that zoning has direct and indirect effects on health. So when Prince George's County began to announce to the county that we're going to do this and we want the community's input because we haven't done this in 50 years, so we want to make sure that we do this so that what we do now works for all of us going forward, we felt like since they were asking for input that we should share our two cents. But the zoning process is now at a stage where they have a draft of the new ordinance, and so the county has asked that Prince George's County residents show up at the town hall next week and hear what the new draft at this point, at the stage they're at now, what the new draft sounds like so that they can weigh in. That's a perfect opportunity because if you live in the county, the zoning will affect you. There's nothing about it, whether you know it or not.
Well, tell us, how does zoning impact our health?
Okay. So zoning decides where we put buildings. Zoning decides where we put sidewalks. Zoning decides how far your home is from the park. Zoning decides how well we take care of the environment around the buildings. So if, for example, you have low-income housing closest to the places where there are food deserts. A food desert is a place where there's not enough good, nutritious food. So let's say the low-income housing is closest to the food desert. That means that all the people in low-income housing are closest to the places where there's bad food, and or there's not enough good food, or they could be close to a food swamp, which is the opposite. Which
or
is
not
too
even
much
close
bad.
To access to food based right. on transportation accessibility.
Right. Exactly. If you have a federal highway dividing the neighborhood, on one side there is part of the neighborhood zoned for housing, highway in between, and on the other side is where all the shopping is, then getting over to where the shopping is becomes a problem. So that affects your health because now getting food becomes a problem. Now getting the food is two buses if you don't have a car, you know, or that getting to the hospital is two buses and a train if you don't drive, if you're a senior living in a senior community. If that also means that if you are somebody who would prefer to walk to the metro, if the zoning happens in a way that doesn't make that possible, then that impacts how much physical activity you get. If you're too far away from the park, or if you're zoned in a way that your neighborhood attracts too much unsavory activity or crime, then you don't have enough access to places to exercise. So all of these things impact your home.
Or if they start to construct something too close to a landfill or...
Absolutely. If you're too close to a landfill, then you get the environmental problems from the fumes from the landfill. If you're too close to a highway exit, you get the fumes from the trucks. So all of these things.
Would that also include, like, if they wanted to bring in, like, maybe a juvenile center into the area that may cause people to be concerned of crime?
A juvenile center might mean that people are concerned about crime. It may not bring crime, but it may bring a concern that, with a juvenile center will come crime. And, yeah, absolutely. So all of those things will affect your health.
And another area that we want to talk about is the importance of voting, because you're voting for the policymakers. Is that correct?
That's right. And so one of the things that needs to happen is that, you know, every individual citizen who's eligible should know when the deadlines are, should know what the criteria are for registration and be willing to show up and make their voices heard.
Yeah, and so another thing that I find really interesting is that the public policy can be enforced or put in place in several ways. Now, we talked about before that it can happen because people do participate, but you also mentioned something very interesting in one of our earlier conversations, is that sometimes public policy will be enforced because people did not participate.
Exactly.
Talk about that.
Exactly. Sometimes laws are written so that, okay, here's the law, it'll fix this problem, but we want input from the community or we want input from the lawmakers. If we get input from the lawmakers within the next 6 months or within the next 90 days, then we'll take that input and that'll be the final law. If we don't hear anything from anybody, then the current status quo stands. So sometimes that's how laws happen. It happens because there's a provisional thing written that says, we will go in this direction. If people speak up, we follow their lead. If they don't, we'll just leave it as it is.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so we need to know that public policy, these laws, rules, and regulations are not permanent. So if there is a particular policy in place, how challenging is it to get it changed?
That's a hard question, because it depends on whether you're talking about something that's local or regional or something that's federal.
Let's talk local.
Okay. So local, if you have let's say here in Montgomery County, you have a county resolution that does, it says you will install sprinklers in every building built in the county starting from 10 years ago all the way going forward. If it is something like that, where there are numbers that show that if you have sprinklers, then the building is less likely to burn to the ground, and we have data that show that, it'll be a lot harder to get that off the books because it's working.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have something else that you institute or you pass as a law or as a policy or as an ordinance, and then people begin to collect data and they find out that it's not working, that's easier to change because you can go back and say, here, we tried this, it didn't work, let's try it again. For some things, they will change based on who's in office. Some things will change based on the cycles of office where people change, depending on cycles. But for some things will be easier, some things will be harder. It depends. There's no easy answer to that question.
And so basically, if you see a problem that exists, then the process would be to go to the local representative that's responsible for that area, and their strength in numbers, I take it, and then that what starts the process of them at least looking into it. Is that how it works?
Absolutely, absolutely. So if they only hear from one or two people, they'll think, oh, okay, one or two people are concerned. If 100 people show up, then they have a totally different outlook. If their phones are ringing every day, Monday through Friday, that's a different response from the phone rang one time on Monday and then it doesn't ring again on that issue till next week. They'll just respond differently.
Right. And basically, public policy is not tied to the elections. They can be introduced for change at any time during the year, I take it.
Absolutely.
Great.
As long as it's bothering you, that's the time to
Yes.
move.
And so, like you said, there's strength in numbers. Are numbers, high numbers, always necessary? Can it be where if you're able to prove that a particular policy is impacting a group of people, such as seniors or infants, could that also be enough for them to make changes to that policy, even if the strength in numbers are not there?
In that case, influence matters. In that case, you'd have to go to somebody with outsized influence, somebody with inordinate influence, somebody with more influence than normal to be able to push the levers. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, again, we're talking with Byron Soji Thomas. He is with HPRC. He's the Deputy Director for Health Policy Research and Analysis. And why don't you give them your website where they can learn more about what you do, your blogs and everything.
Okay, thank you. So we are at hprc.info. That's hprc.info. And if you go to our website, there are any number of things you will find, including papers and publications, and find, for example, a timeline we recently that showed development of traffic safety policy. So if you go there, you'll find how traffic safety policy developed from understanding that speed, so you need to slow down, from understanding that seatbelts can save lives, so we put the seatbelts in the cars, understanding that airbags could be useful, so we put them in, from taking the lead out of the gasoline, that kind of thing. So we have a section for our publications and papers. We have a section for events and upcoming events. We have some basic definitions about basic terms that we use, and so that would be a useful place to learn a little bit more about us.
And you also have a blog, which you write a lot of the blogs, right?
Yes, and so our blog is every Wednesday, and it's at hprc.info.tumblr.com.
Okay, and so let's go ahead and talk about one other message that I think we want to make clear before we segue into the second half of the show. We want to make sure that people understand that HPRC's role is to provide the information from your research findings about how the people in your constituents can better to use that data and that information to make better decisions about improving their health, right?
Absolutely.
And also to make point, make it clear that we want to make sure that they understand that they have the power to influence public policy by participating in the process.
Absolutely.
And before we go into the second half of the show, is there anything else that you want to reiterate to our listeners that we discussed earlier?
Well, absolutely, that public policy matters, and it matters because it can impact your health, even if it is not directly related to health. If it is about housing can impact your health. If it is about transport can impact your health. If it is about green spaces and open spaces, that can impact your health. And so we hope this is the beginning of a series of conversations on these subjects.
Okay, getting ready to take a break, but before we do, we're going to play a commercial that features your incredible Health Connect Prince George's app. And so then we'll come back and talk more about what you're doing in this app, okay? Thank you.
If you live in Prince George's County, Maryland, listen up for this important announcement about how you can gain access to resources that can improve your health. The Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC, has a mobile app called Health Connect Prince George's that can help you find local resources such as farmers markets, parks and hike trails, recreation centers, community health centers, hospitals, pharmacies, and much more. The Health Connect Prince George's app is available for download on Google Play and the iTunes App Store. You can also visit www.hprc.info. That's www.hprc.info and click the links at the bottom of the page. Download the Health Connect app today to connect you and your community to a healthier tomorrow.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the second half of Make the Change Radio Show. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell, and rejoining me for the second half of the show is Byron Soji Thomas. Byron is the Deputy Director for Health Policy Research and Analysis for the Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC. During the second half of the show, we are going to continue our discussion about public policy, what it means, how it can impact your life, how you can participate. And then we're going to talk about this fabulous mobile app that HPRC has called Health Connect Prince George's. Again, that's Health Connect Prince George's mobile app.
And I want to take a moment to just basically say that the main focus of the Health Policy Research Consortium is the connection between public policy and how public policy affects our health. HPRC focuses on areas such as housing and whether or not our homes can make us sick. They talk about access to affordable, nutritious foods that can improve our health. Access to safe transportation options are just a few of the areas that HPRC focuses on, but all are driven by public policy, and they can all affect our health. And HPRC wants to inform the community about the findings of their research. And for a list of HPRC's publications covering topics from housing to maternal and child health care to physical activity and community engagement, please visit their website at www.hprc.info. And while you're at the website, be sure to download their mobile app called Health Connect Prince George's This app can help you find local resources such as farmers markets, your parks, community centers, and more, all designed to help you live a healthier life. And I must admit, I have used the app. I use it all the time. As a matter of fact, I was looking for a farmers market in my neighborhood, and through the app, I was able to find it, get directions on how to get there. And another reason why I think the app is so incredible, because although I am healthy and I want to keep it that way, but you never know when you have a little emergency where you're able to drive yourself to the hospital, you can't wait for the ambulance, or you need to drive someone else, you can just look at this app and you can find the close healthcare centers, the emergency centers. So, and even if you don't live in the area, if you're traveling in the area, then you can find basically everything that you need in the local Prince George's County area. So Byron is going to talk about this incredible app and some of the other features that it offers. So Byron, tell us what's the name of the app and why was it developed?
Yes. So as you said, it's Health Connect Prince George's. And we developed it because we want to have a touch point for our audiences to be able to say, okay, well, all this talk about health policy, is it just in the papers that you write? Do I have to read one report to understand it? Do I have to read one of your reports to touch it? Is it only come time, or is it only when there's a town hall meeting? Is there anything that's practical that we can do for an everyday level where I can do everyday little things to impact my health? So that's how the app came about. And so you've already described some of the offerings. You know, you can find pharmacies and market, and you can find community, etc. But the other thing about the app is that we have a collection of health policy resolutions from county municipal levels. This is all Prince George's County stuff, but there are county ordinances here, and there are ordinances from the individual cities, towns, and municipalities within the county. So, you know, for example, we have a resolution from the county concerning doing a green fleet for the purpose of purchasing the most energy-efficient vehicles for the county, so that the county can reduce pollution and improve health. There's a link to transit-oriented development projects in the county. There's something about amending public nuisance provisions in residential properties. So the county does all of this kind of thing, and we kind of catalog them here. And then at the local and municipal level, we have some other resolutions and policies listed for all the various municipalities and towns and cities in the county, from Greenbelt, for example, to Riverdale, to Bowie, to all of them, covering anything from sanitation to what to do about immunization, to hospitals, to budgets.
Yeah, so it's a lot there. Yeah. Truly is. And like, you know, the park and hike trails. And basically, I think that's so important because we're always looking for opportunities, you know, to walk, to enjoy our areas. And everything that you have here is geared towards better health.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. Okay, this is Health Connect Prince George's, and we're in a tri-state area. And I know D.C. and Maryland and other counties are asking, well, are you going to do something like that for us?
Yeah, well, this was our launch, our initial, let's get this thing out, let's get this thing in people's hands, let's see what kind of response we get. As you can imagine, there's a lot of research that goes into putting all the content together and collating it and organize it in a way that it's easier for you to use it. So, yeah, the research continues so that we can eventually expand this. But, you know, that research is ongoing. The next level will be to build it out for the rest of the state of Maryland and then begin to build it out for the region. But yet to come, we don't have any announcements to make about that yet.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So tell them where they can go and download the app.
Wherever you like to get your apps. I mean, if you go to Apple iTunes or Google iPlay, you can get it.
And then go to your website at www.hprc.info. And if you go to the bottom of the page, you will find the links for Google Play and Apple iTunes Store.
That's right.
Okay, so what else do we want to know, do you want our listeners to know about the app before we move on to another interesting topic?
Download the app, use it, respond, tell us if you like it.
Okay, sounds good. Now let's talk about another area, and that is housing. And one of the things that you talk about that really got my attention, and that was, can our homes make us sick?
Yes.
Tell us how.
So I brought you an actual hard copy of the paper, and people, if our listeners are interested, they can go to our website under the publication section, and you can see the report. But yeah, the short answer is yes, your home can make you sick. So let's say, for example, your home has mold. Mold can make you sick. Let's say, for example, your stairs are rickety or the railing is not properly secured to the wall. That can cause falls. Falls are a leading cause of injury for senior citizens in America. It's a big problem, actually. Your home can make you sick if you have fire damage that you didn't repair.
Water
damage mm-hmm. you didn't repair. There are any number of different reasons why we do building enforcement, and those are some of the reasons why we do enforcement of the building code, so that to make sure that none of these things impact you. The location of your home could mean that you are too far away from safe recreation. You're too far away from the park or too far away from a gym, or your sidewalks are broken, so you're afraid to go walking. That can make you sick. If your home is located in a high crime area, that is bad for your mental health. If you're living in a home that you can't afford the mortgage or the rent, that can make you sick because it affects your mental health. Your mental health. We found, for example, that when the housing crash happened as a consequence of what happened in 2008 and 2009, it turned out that Prince George's County, for example, was one of the hardest hit counties in the nation from the housing crash that resulted from the economy crashing in 08. And so...
And like lead, what role do you guys play in terms of, you know, letting people know about lead issues in the home?
Oh, yeah. I mean, lead can also make you sick. And so lead could be in the paint or lead could be in the water. And, you know, we've spent a lot of decades in American life where we have been trying to communicate from the public health standpoint the damage that lead can do to people's bodies. And now it's more of a national conversation because of what happened in Flint, Michigan. But Maryland has a strong lead abatement program. It's written in the law that you shouldn't use lead paint after a certain time period in history, and for the homes that had lead paint, you should find a way to mitigate that paint over it, or do what is necessary to make sure that the paint chips don't get into a child's mouth or any of that, or it doesn't become lead dust. All of these things are part of the story that folks need to understand, that in some of these cases there are actual laws to protect you, there are actual policies to enforce these laws. But for some of them, it requires a lot more awareness. And lead is a great example because we have spent a lot of decades dealing with lead and paint, and now we have to spend a lot more time dealing with lead and mortar.
Okay, so let me just make sure that I'm clear. How does public policy come into play when it comes to housing and what you just discussed?
So a public policy, for example, decides building codes. So public policy will decide when you're building a building, this is what the engineers and the architects need to make sure to protect whoever will be occupying or going into the building. So it needs to be this strong, it needs to be this high. There are those. And then there are codes that say, well, when you build it, you need to put smoke and fire alarms. In Prince George's County, there's a law that says you need to put a carbon monoxide alarm. And that is a relatively new one. There are codes that say you need to put sprinklers. That's relatively new. There are codes that say don't use lead paint. We've stopped doing that. Don't do that anymore. That could take you to jail. Public policy comes into all of those to make sure that if we need to write a law to protect people, to protect the public's health, we do that. And if we need to find a way to write some regulation to enforce a law, we do that. If we need to find a way to make sure that every time the budgets are written in the county or the budgets are written in the state, there's a line item there that says we will spend X amount of money on dealing with this issue or that issue.
Yeah, and I ran into that situation when I purchased my home. It did not have a railing going down to the lower level, and all homes, when it comes to having stairs, are supposed to have a railing. I think it's supposed to be on one side of those particular stairs.
So all of those codes need to be enforced, and so part of what public policy mm-hmm. does is, okay, we need to enforce the code, so we need to be going to these buildings and checking them out. So what that means for public policy is somebody needs to write X amount of dollars into the budget to hire the people that will go out and go do the codes. That's all part of what public policy does.
And so part of what you'd want to do, too, is to reduce the health disparities. Why do health disparities exist?
Good question. Some of it is historical. That in American history we have situations where some populations were advantaged over others for all the historical reasons that those happened. And so as laws began to come into effect that would change some of those inbuilt differences and inbuilt discrimination and inbuilt disparities, some of the gaps began to close. But in housing, for example, in preparing for this report, we found some of the built-in problems in American housing that came out of the Great Depression. So as a result of the Great Depression, the Federal Housing Administration was created, and they had a handbook that they wrote that wrote the rules of the road for who would get loans to buy homes, right? So the underwriting rules said that when you lending, some neighborhoods would be more favored than others. So if somebody wanted a home in X place where you had a red line around it, don't lend them there. That's not good land, so don't do that. Lend to somebody in the other neighborhood. And so then when it's time to sell the home, make sure that you keep the races separate. And so these kinds of things would build differences that would become huge gaps and huge disparities that would continue decade after decade, because what would happen is if you create a neighborhood where everybody is disadvantaged, then the capital doesn't come in there. If the capital doesn't come in there, then the property values begin to fall. If the property values begin to fall, then there's not enough money that is contributed from that neighborhood into the school system. So they don't get enough money back into their schools. Their schools are not as good. Then that means that the kids there, if they graduate from those schools, don't have as much opportunity. Then if they don't have as much opportunity, then the cycle continues. And so for some of these, they're historical. For some of them, they're resource-based, that if you don't put enough resources into the community, then there are not enough resources to help them grow.
And you know, this is really interesting, because when I went home to Cleveland, and I ended up, you know, I got hungry, and I was just looking for something quick, fast food, I have to admit, but I was looking for a salad. And let me tell you, this one area in Cleveland that I was in, I had to drive what appeared to be almost 10 miles to find, like, a Wendy's. Now, how does that play into the fact that when you get to some of our urban communities, we can find these fast food restaurants on every other corner? How does that play into zoning and ordinances and the health disparities when you realize that a lot of people who live in some of the urban areas, the poorer areas, they have high incidence of diabetes and high blood pressure? So tell me how that plays into all of that. That those areas in Cleveland, do you think they protested or they went to the community event, the town halls, and said, no, we don't want these fast food restaurants within a, what, 5 or 10 mile radius? Is that something that may have happened?
It might have. And, you know, typically what happens is that commercial interests and business people do their own research to determine, if I build a business here, will I make money? So when they've done that research, they go into the community and figure out whether or not they should get started with the investment to start the business, and whether or not, if they build a business, they can get employees to work in them, and if they build a business, will they have customers until that the business is viable? And so businesses make those determinations based on whatever their business goals are, whatever their bottom lines
are.
But
will we have any say, like, in, say, for instance, just, you know, maybe liquor stores on every corner, things of that nature? Can we impact public policy in those areas?
Yes. So I was getting to that. So what happens is, typically, the policymakers are in a place where they're looking for, well, how do I bring investment into my community? Because if my people are working, then they can afford the rent, then they can afford to buy their own food. And so the businesses that are attracted into a particular jurisdiction are not always scrutinized from the standpoint of, will it be healthy? They're sometimes scrutinized from the standpoint of, well, will they bring economic opportunity?
Mm.
And will they bring jobs? So that's another public policy question. So what is the intersection between somebody having a job, how much will they make from that job, and consequently, will they be able to afford the Wendy's? Or if you bring a Whole Foods, will that Wendy's paycheck pay for the Whole Foods grocery bill? And then, so these are all conversations that interlock and intersect, and they are not inside. They shouldn't happen in silos, really. They really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the public policy discussion comes down to who's affected, where are the resources, and if you don't bring the resources from the Wendy's restaurateur who wants to come and build a Wendy's restaurant, who else is going to come and build a business and bring jobs? And when they bring the jobs, how much will they pay the employees? And with that paycheck, can they afford the housing in the neighborhood? Or will they have to go take two buses to get home to live someplace else, because in the neighborhood where the Wendy's is, they can't afford the rent there? So they're overlapping public policy issues there.
Yes.
And they all impact your health.
Right, because they may decide, look, we need this particular company here for jobs, more important than whatever products or services that they're selling that may impact our health negatively. Let us make that independent decision.
Exactly, but the decision should not be independent.
Right.
The people who will be affected should be willing to say, okay, well, mm-hmm. I get this job. Okay, let me look at this paycheck. Well, I can afford the Wendy's, but if you bring a Whole Foods here, I can't afford the Whole Foods.
Right.
And or if so, at that point, the policymakers should be thinking, okay, well, how do I get a farmer's market in here? Or how do I get an alternative in here? Or if I invite the farmer's market, is it only people who have cars that can get to it? Can somebody get to it with a bus? And so the zoning ordinance has to take into account, and, you know, some of these zoning ordinances are really old, and so there are a lot of jurisdictions that are beginning to rewrite them because they were written a long time ago, like in George's County, like I told you, it's the first time in 50 years. So as more and more of that happens, as more and more people understand that we don't do public policy in silos, that there are social determinants of health, that's another big term, that means that there are things in the society that you live that have an impact on your health, that determine what kind of health you have, even before you first set foot in a doctor's office. So where you live, the size of your paycheck, your zip code, you know, somebody did something here in the D.C. area about life expectancy in the D.C. area, and this was another research group, and they found that life expectancies are higher along the red line than along the green line. And so, you know, what we want in public policy is a situation where everybody has an equal opportunity to be healthy regardless of zip code.
Right, absolutely. But we know that zip code matters, right?
It does. And, you know, we're hoping that, there's another research group that we work with that says housing matters.
That's right.
Place matters, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Location.
Location matters, like the real estate people tell
That's
us.
Right.
So the idea is that we want to communicate a message that public policy should not be considered in silos for the reasons that I just described about Cleveland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Cleveland is not just Cleveland. Cleveland is everywhere. There's a big city in America.
That's right.
And
neighborhoods that represent that. So let me ask you this. So since HPRC is located in Prince George's County, you're in the Greenbelt area. Let's say that you are aware of some of the issues that are coming forth, zoning ordinances, businesses that are coming into the areas. So if you see something that will impact the community negatively, but the people are not coming out in numbers to address it, do you address it on the public's behalf?
Good question. Well, our charge is to do the investigation and inform the folks, whether it is informing the policymakers or informing the general public that would have to live with whatever policy is designed. So if we see a situation that we feel we should talk about, we'll do the research, find the information, and put it in the hands of, put it in the public hands through our social media outlets and through our website and through community forums and through a channel like this radio show, and or put the information in the hands of the influential people who make the policy. And so to say that we do it on the public's behalf is mostly right. Our goal is to make sure that everybody has the information, whether it is public, who will have to live with the policy, or the influential policymakers who make the policy.
Because at a certain point, you have the opportunity to write comments, right?
Absolutely. Sometimes they ask for public comment, and we're happy in whatever way we can to make those comments, insofar as the comments will be helpful. We think they'll be helpful.
Okay. Talk about, I think you mentioned earlier that there's a zoning issue coming up in Prince George's County, and you're having a two-hour event coming up to invite the community to talk about.
No, that's the county's event.
That's a county event.
Yeah,
tell us about that, when it is. Do you have
I don't have the exact details, but I think it's on it's next week.
Okay.
And it's in a big county facility. I think it's in the library or community center. And elected members of the Prince George's County Council will be there with the professionals who have actually the Prince George's County Planning Division and the professionals who have helped them to draft the new ordinance. So they'll all be there, and they'll tell the residents what's in the new draft, and they'll ask for the comment from the from the residents, but they have a process where they're taking public comment until the beginning of September.
So okay, and do you post that on your website at all, that information? Is that available?
We have sent something out via our newsletter. We have a monthly newsletter that we have advertised there, and our newsletters are posted on our website.
Okay, great, because that's going to be important, and you said that's the opportunity. It lasts about 2 hours. They feed you lunch, and they get the presentation.
It's an after-work thing, I think. I think it's 7 to 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so let's talk about now how you get your information out. I know you talked about the newsletters, the reports, social media, the app. You actually do a lot of outreach via policy forums.
Yeah, we just did one in Richmond where we talked about the patient-centered medical home, which is a concept that says if you are a patient, you should be able to go somewhere where there's team-based care. So that it's not just the doctor or the nurse, but to the degree that the pharmacist can be helpful or a social worker can be helpful, there's a team-based care, especially for people who have complex health needs.
Okay, and now you also go out to visit the senior citizens centers. How does that work with policy and what you're trying to do there?
Well, yeah, I mean, our idea is just to get the seniors engaged in their health and in whatever can help them. So one recent senior center that we went to, the idea there was to help seniors find health information online. So, you know, some seniors are online savvy and web savvy, mm-hmm. and are always online. Some seniors don't know how to turn on the computer. So it was an opportunity to go to a senior center and say, okay, sometimes you have questions, you can't wait till the next time you go to the doctor to answer it, or you're just curious now and you want to find out. So you can go online and find some of these things. And so it was just an opportunity to do outreach like that.
Okay, and you did like back-to-school extravaganza. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was at the beginning of the school year that just ended. So we went to the south of Prince George's County, and we went into this community center, and we set up different booths. We invited partners like hospitals and the school system and the health department to come and talk about how the school kids can be healthy, talk about the immunizations, talk about the school lunches, talk about physical education and exercise, and talked about how all of these impact their ability to learn and do well in school.
Yeah, and see, that's another area for public policy based on the school's lunch program.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a big one. Sure.
Absolutely. It's useful for kids to not show up in school hungry.
Yes, right. And healthy options to choose from.
Absolutely.
Tell us about your YouTube video that you have coming up.
Yes. This is in the planning stages, and we're taping now. The idea is to do these 12 to 15 minute videos that we'll post on YouTube. We will invite health experts, and we will ask them questions about specific topics, all the way from community policing to the work of the NIH, to the influence of public health in health outcomes, to any number of subjects. So we're in the taping stages, and we've invited the guests, and we're in the process of putting the shows together. And then once we have them all edited and ready for publication, we'll let everybody know.
Well, I've just been given notification that we have about 1.5 minutes left. So do you have any closing remarks you want to share with our listeners?
Well, first, thank you on behalf of HBRC, our principal investigator, Mr. Corey Simfume, and on behalf of Crystal and Lisa, who you've thanked already, and our entire team in Greenbelt. Thank you so much for inviting us. And we hope that the listeners were informed and edified in a way, and that I didn't raise more questions than I answered. And if I did, you know, Patricia has promised that she'll invite us back. So if there's a lingering question, if I raise more questions than I answered, then I'm sure Patricia will let me come back at least one time.
That's right.
But thank you very much. It's been a good hour. Thank
yeah,
you.
You've been very informative. Thank you for helping us to understand the public policy process, how it works, how we can be instrumental in driving policy. And so you've been really wonderful. Thank you so much, Byron.
Thank
and we will
you,
have
Patricia.
You back again.
Thank you.
All right. So if you have any questions regarding Byron's conversation with me today, you can also send me an email at www.patriciaturrell.com, and we will also have this episode listed on our website for you to download and share with your friends. Get active, get involved in the community so that we can make all of our communities a healthier place to be. So tune in next time. next Saturday for more lively discussions about how you can make positive changes in your life.
Research and information that we report during today's broadcast was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under number 5U54MD00860802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.
Remember to tune in to Make the Change every Saturday from 12 noon p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also visit with Patricia at www.patriciaterrell.com for links to social media, email, and blogs. Thank you for listening today, and remember that changing the world starts with changing you.